Welcome to the 12-Step Recovery Evolution podcast. Visit recoveryevolution.co.uk for more episodes, helpful resources and links to our social media. Also visit the site for information on how you can attend a future Zoom session or workshop live. Thank you.
Morning, everybody. Good to see you back again. Happy Friday. Seems like every day's a Friday, which is nice. So I think we're just going to opportunity to people ask some questions, have some discussion and whatever you guys want to, whatever you guys got on your mind. So hand it back over to Fox to unmute whoever wants to ask a question.
Hi, yes, Lindsay. You know, the stuff we were talking about yesterday, Lester, with the dysfunctional family and stuff.
I feel
really bad asking this question because all my mum and dad have ever done is just love me. It makes me want to cry. All they've ever done is just love me and supported me completely unconditionally. And I know a lot of people have had really bad upbringings and stuff, and I haven't. It's been like a fairy tale. But I made my amends to them and everything, and they obviously just accepted it. But why can't I just think I'm lucky and I love them without being kind of all morbid about it? Do you know what I mean? I don't understand. Is that dysfunctional in itself? I mean, I know when we spoke the other day, I feel like I'm about 13 emotionally sometimes, and I should just realize that I'm blessed and I'm lucky and I've got a nice family, but it almost hurts my heart rather than makes me feel grateful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I guess I think when you look at the when you're doing your own inventory, the step four, it says that, you know, we're looking at the stock in trade. So it's not saying that we're not got good things about us. And, you know, sometimes when you do step fours, because people are looking for the negatives, they can start feeling really bad about themselves. And, you know, when they do that, you kind of often say, well, you know what, stop the negatives for a minute and make a list of the positive things about yourself and the good things about your life. So it's not saying that we're looking for all, you know, just this, where everything's negative. It's just saying it's the problems that we're looking for that are causing our trouble. So when you actually remove all the good stuff away from your parents, that we acknowledge is, of course, they've done a lot of good, but we're looking at the things that maybe they didn't do so well because maybe they didn't have that to give. And often that can sometimes just be, you know, people that are emotionally shut down. Yeah. Then they don't develop emotions in you, and that leaves you in a place of, you know, not getting to know who you are, to feeling that you've got something missing in your life. Because, you know, materially, people can often say, you know, and I hear men say it all the time, actually. They say, well, I don't know what's wrong with them. I buy them clothes, I give them money to go to the best schools, I give them everything they want. And often when they're a bit of a workaholic, but if you went and asked the children would say, but you were never there. And it's that you not being there, it's that that emotional absence is an incredibly damaging, but again, it's almost invisible because they're going to refer back to what you can see. Well, we had a lovely house, we had a lovely car, you had lovely clothes. And it's like, yeah, but I never felt any emotions of love, or I never really felt, all I was feeling that you were anxious all the time, you were angry all the time, you were worried all the time, you were busy all the time. And all my emotions ever felt was them experiences. And so it's kind of, we're looking, not saying that they didn't do good, or it's, but that's not the bit that we're looking for. So again, I don't want to get you to say it in public, but when you, unless you want to, but if you could think of some of the things that they didn't do so well that may have caused your discomfort.
I think, I mean, my mum and dad are really working class, and my dad always worked two jobs, so it's not like materialistically anything that I wanted, I snapped my fingers and I got it. It's not like that. It's just, how can they be so forgiving and just so loving. And even now, you know, if I need anything, they'll, I'm not just talking about money, but they would bail me out with money. But the little things that they do, just, I don't know, mum will cook us a cake if she's baking, little things like that. Like, it's hard to explain. How can someone be so
well, but
lovely?
What about the emotional soothing? Again, that's still things. People, again, they're not necessarily bad people, but you can't transmit what you haven't got. So they could do a lot of nice things, but that doesn't necessarily satisfy you emotionally.
Right.
Now, your problems that you may have are in your emotions. They're not in your, maybe you have a nice house. Maybe you got a job. Maybe you got nice clothes. Maybe you can make yourself a nice cake. But emotionally, are you managing to soothe yourself?
What, me personally, do you mean?
Yeah.
I feel like emotionally, I can't look after myself very well.
Right. And emotionally,
I feel like I'm still dependent on my parents emotionally.
Right. And how are they emotionally?
My dad's a bit, he's not as loving as my mum. I don't know. How would you say my mum is emotionally? She's very, very kind and very, very loving.
If you want me to speak, I'll speak.
Yeah, perhaps Mike can answer a bit better.
Just from what I've seen over this past sort of year or so, it's like your mum is very loving and giving. Your dad, he loves you, but he's very, very, very old school, like my dad was. It's like giving financially and giving materially, but really giving of their love and themselves. I don't think that's there. But again, it's the sins of the father, isn't it? The dad was the same, and the dad's dad is like my dad. His dad was a very, very strict authoritarian, and your dad is quite, he can be quite strict, can't he?
Yeah.
Quite strict with you when you were old school, mate. So I think what this does, workshops and the program and all the other stuff we do, it gets us, it enables us to break those chains of the past, doesn't it?
So yeah, because I think when our emotional needs are met, then we're generally quite happy as people.
Yeah.
But if our emotional needs, so if you go somewhere like Africa where they have very little material, their material needs aren't met. But one thing you know that people will say is that how happy most of them are.
Yes.
Because a lot of their emotional needs are met. And so I think this is kind of what makes it look a little bit invisible, because it's our emotional needs that we tend to be looking at. Most people, it's about how they feel. They want to say, I want to feel happy. I want to feel safe. I want to feel secure. I want to feel loved. I want to feel wanted. So it's actually that stuff that sometimes can be a little bit difficult for us to see, but that's the area we should be looking in. So if you've got issues that are coming out of your childhood, then, and you can't see it, and it does feel like a bit of a betrayal to our parents, but it's not about beating them up. It's, again, they probably, that's why I like the one shoe story, is like, if you look at the family photograph, they've only got one shoe, but the shoe that they have probably will match the one that you've got, but it's not just been adequate enough to build an emotionally stable other adult, because they may not be emotionally stable themselves, but they're managing it. And you know, the material world can sometimes mask, you know, people that have got great wealth and great education can be just as emotionally screwed up as anybody. But then you can
I just feel like my mum
family that have nothing, but they're emotionally well balanced, so they're all right.
I think that's what it is. I think, like, my mum has always just loved me so much. Not really wrapped me up in cotton wool, but totally unconditional love from the minute I was born up until now. And I think that maybe that's why I feel like I'm still quite emotionally dependent on her. I don't know.
Well, you even, look, you kind of already
said
that.
I sound like a brat for saying that.
Well, you already said that you feel 13, and that's probably where the emotional dependency and the stop, that's where the growth stopped right there. So, you know, your mum probably was supporting you emotionally, but up to that point. So, you know, for somebody like me, that's the point I'd want to dig into, and then again, see what's really going on there, and seeing what, you know, like we say, that it can be a little bit invisible. And when people come to our group, you kind of want to show them where that dysfunction is, but it's sometimes hard to see it and hard to accept it. But then it becomes really obvious and a little bit embarrassing.
Yeah,
like, man, that actually, when you put two and two together, it actually does make four, and it does make sense. And it's, again, people, you know, some people's parents are like terrible, but some people's parents are nice, but they still not helping you to develop emotionally.
Yeah.
And some of that's going to be you, some of that's going to be them. But that's why we say we need to look at your responses and see what, and eventually you have to take responsibility. But again, a 13-year-old not really capable of taking responsibility for certain adult emotions. But if that's as far as your development went as an adult, then the world's going to be a frightening place and difficult for you to deal with.
That makes perfect sense.
So that's the area that you should be looking at, and that's the area you should be trying to get some therapy in and working your program around and working with your sponsor about, because it'll start becoming apparent to you when we start doing some of them groups on this. It'll become really clear. I'm kind of mindful that I don't want to dig you too deep, because just want to sort of show you that it's obviously, that's definitely an area that you've got to work on. But again, just because somebody hasn't got something, you can't be angry at them. They're probably giving you the best they can.
Yeah, sorry to take up a lot of time. Thanks, that's helped.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, folks. Thank you. I'm really getting a lot out of these groups. So what occurred to me, what's been occurring to me this week, we're looking at this dysfunction family stuff and making amends and all those things. And I can see really clearly in my family, I had alcoholic grandfather on my dad's side, alcoholic grandmother on my mother's side. Those two got together and they got me, and I'm an addict. Interesting, my brothers and sisters went through the same trauma as me, but they're not. So I'll take that on board as well. And I'm looking at my kids now, and I've got real fears around one of my children. I think he's the product of two really dysfunctional, addict parents. And I'm finding, I don't know how you break that cycle. Before my children, they're in their early 20s, before they have their kids, is it me trying to do their lives right now, feeling like this? Is this, what can I do? What do I do? How do I respond? I can see, I talked to my dad the other day, and my dad said, I was talking about riding my bike, and he said, have you got a helmet? And I was thinking, now shut up, Dad. And I suddenly realised he's doing the same sort of things and expressing the same sort of concern that I feel and want to express to my kids. But I'm 56, and my kids are grown up. I just don't know where I come in, what do I do, how do I be this parent? Having been absent for a good 10 years in their lives, it's these kinds of questions. Is that breaking that cycle of dysfunction, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
Well, there ain't a way. That's the hard reality, that there's no quick way that you're going to feel good about. You know, again, I think that's where we have to look at ourselves and think, are we being selfish when people now, you know, like that thing that we read yesterday about coming out of the cyclone cellar after the tornado, seeing the devastation and saying, ain't it grand, the wind stopped blowing, but you see there's years of reconstruction ahead. And that's the bit that I think can really, people don't want that bit. They just want it to be all right. I mean, for myself, coming into recovery thinking I'm all screwed up, and you kind of almost get the impression that when I become unscrewed, then the world's going to be this wonderful place. And then what you actually realise is that I'm just one of a whole mass of screwed up people that were doing kind of okay, but they're all very dysfunctional around me. And I didn't have children, so I've not got that responsibility of screwing them up. But years of bad parenting isn't going to be fixed in a mumbled sorry. It may be years of reconstruction are going to lay ahead of you. And so the only conclusion that I can come to, and the only solution that I can offer, is to say you need to understand this program. You need to understand addiction. You need to understand relationships. You need to get as many tools as you can. And over the years of being in this relationship with these now adult children of alcoholics and addicts, when they're doing whatever they do, your response is the only way that you're going to be able to start helping them form the ability to be having healthy relationships. But it's not going to happen overnight. It's a lifetime job now. And some of it's going to feel terrible. Some of it's going to feel good. Some of it's going to feel okay. Some of it's going to be just unbearable. But the thing is that if somebody in recovery who's making an ongoing amends, which ain't, I just don't drink and take drugs, it's my ongoing amends, and then I stay away from everybody because they hurt my feelings and upset me and won't do what I want, and I can't control them to adjust my emotional state, as actually a proper spiritual person, that you still engage with them and you use yourself and you're it's to put ourselves to be where we can be of maximum service to God and others, that we carry this message back to our families, but not in our necessarily in our words, but in our actions. And you know, I tell you what, I think I want to tell this story. It's just come into my mind, and I don't know quite, not really used this story before, but I kind of had a little couple of thoughts about it. But because again, I think we need a bit of a foundation to understand this stuff, because it's so dynamic, but it is going to be about your ongoing responses. See, that's what makes this program so wonderful. The more that you learn it and then start trusting in it and then start applying it, you also give the other people an opportunity to change. And not all of them are going to want to, and most of them aren't going to straight away. But see, when I actually go to dysfunctional people, but I start acting out on these principles, then they initially not going to like it. Because people that are dysfunctional, when you actually start becoming functional, then you're sort of breaking the pattern. But they're not necessarily going to come jumping into that pattern. They're actually going to start feeling their discomfort and their pain. And the first thing that they're going to greet you with is aggression. So whenever you challenge anybody that's dysfunctional, they're not going to thank you for it. If they did that, they're not dysfunctional. They were just wrong. But if they're dysfunctional and you challenge their bad behavior, you're going to get greeted with aggression. And that aggression is designed to get you back in line, to get you back into them, helping them to function with their dysfunction. So I'm going to tell this story as the structure that I'm going to keep referring back to, like the one shoe story, but a little bit clearer in the sense of being in relationship with other adults that can be strangers or your own family members. And this is the story. That imagine that there's a calf, and every day this guy comes in the calf, this big bloke. He stinks, he's rude, he's loud, he's aggressive. He sits down every day at the same table at the same time. He orders a massive super breakfast every day. And as he's eating it, he takes over the whole atmosphere of the calf. And the owner, which could be you, lets him do that. And he's been doing it for 10 years. And at the end of eating this super duper breakfast and having all this tea and coffee and taking over the whole atmosphere, he gets up and walks out and doesn't pay a penny. So now the owner of the calf, they're having a relationship with that customer. Now, when you ask that person, could be you, why are you letting them do that? Why are you letting them come into your calf, eat all that food, disrupt the atmosphere, and then walk out without even paying you? Now, we don't know for sure, because this is where infantry is important and good therapy and good friends is to be able to say, so they might say, well, he cleans me windows, he cuts me grass, and he does such a good job that, you know, he does that, but I kind of like, you know, it's only for an hour. And now you think, you know what, I wouldn't let him do that, but as long as you're happy with that exchange and that you're getting a fair exchange and the value system, you're happy with that value system's okay, then that's not a problem. It might not be what I would do, but if that's your gig. But at the same hand, see, when you start looking at these relationships on the surface, we can all make judgments. But then as we start going under the surface and doing the infantry, then we can say that the person might say, well, he frightens me. He intimidates me and I'm scared of him. And so when he comes in, he came in 10 years ago and he intimidated me. And he even asked me a couple of times over years, do you want me to pay for the breakfast? And you're like, no, it's all right. I wanted him to pay, but I'm scared. Now that's your fault. Now again, you might feel sorry for that person, but it's still a fault. And so as you've come into recovery and you write down, this bloke comes in my coffee shop, my calf, and he eats breakfast every day and he don't pay. And it's like, well, put his side apart, what he's doing wrong. Now, because I might go and ask him and he'll go, he might just be like that. I mean, not most people ain't. He probably knows he's intimidating, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt. And we go and go, why are you going in their coffee shop and their cafe eating all that breakfast and disrupting everyone and not paying? And he might go, well, I asked them and they said they didn't want me to pay. So you go back to the person and you go, he said you didn't want him to pay. And I said, yeah, but I'm scared of him. Scared of him. And they're like, well, that's kind of something you need to deal with. But they know in themselves, see, eventually through their therapy, through their program, through, you know, they're going to get to a point where they're going to go and say, let's call this other guy Dave. Dave, I owe you an apology, mate. You've been coming in here for 10 years and I've been letting you eat dinner and I've been letting you have it for free and you've been intimidating my other customers, and I haven't been quite honest with you, mate. I actually do want you to pay. Now, if he's dysfunctional, he's going to go start attacking you and he's going to make, well, you should have told me, your fault. And he, whenever you challenge dysfunction, I guarantee you 100%, 100% of the time, that if you're being abused by somebody and then you challenge them, if they're dysfunctional, which they probably are because that's why they're doing it in the first place, they may not be conscious of it. They may well be conscious of it. But they're going to make themselves the victim and they're going to try and make you the abuser. And happens 100% of the time. So we know that because we're frightened. That's what we're frightened of. We're frightened. We know that if we go and tell Dave that I want him to pay for his food, that he's going to get angry at me. Now, it can take a little bit of time for you to build up the courage to do that, but that's when you start stop becoming dysfunctional, when you actually build up the courage to go and tell Dave, I'm not giving you any more free breakfast, and I want you to be a little bit more pleasant, a little bit more polite when you come in my calf. Now, the good news is, if Dave is dysfunctional and you keep that position, he ain't going to come back, and you've lost nothing. In actual fact, you've gained a lot. So when them people in your life get the ump and you don't take on them any more of their abuse, and you're like, well, I'm sorry you think that I'm abusing you, and I should have told you 10 years ago, and that was wrong of me. That was because I was scared, and I may have led you to believe, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, I may have led you to believe that it was all right for you to abuse me. So I apologize for that, but now I want it to stop. Now, if they're dysfunctional and they don't want to change, they're just going to disappear and they're not going to come back in your life. So you've gained. You've gained from challenging them. If they're not dysfunctional and that they just were, that's the way they were, and they actually thought that you were happy with that transfer, that value system that you had going, that maybe you just liked them coming in, eating your food for free and being noisy. Maybe they actually thought they were entertaining people. You have to give them the benefit of the doubt. But if they were like, you know what, I'm really sorry, I didn't know I was intimidating you, I really apologize for that. And how many breakfasts have I had over the years? I'm more than happy to refund you the money because I want to give you some value. Because that's what it kind of comes down to in relationships. You get in a fair exchange of value. Now, it goes a lot deeper than that. This is just a basic thing. But then if that person then, once you've told them the truth, that eventually, you know, they may feel a little bit hurt, but that's the beginning of a new relationship. You know, we say to people all the time, look, you need to change this relationship. And it doesn't always mean you need to change the person. Sometimes you just need to change the relationship. And so when you actually express how you feel, and if they take it on board, then you've gained a friend. Plus you get paid for the breakfast, which is a fair, you know, fair exchange and fair value. Now, I've also got, there's a lot more to that, but I just wanted to have a story that we could use to understand how to stop being dysfunctional and what dysfunction is. Because now, listen to this bit, that you are probably both of them people at some time in some relationships. Sometimes you're Dave, and sometimes you're the owner of the business. So have a little think about that, that some relationships, you're both of them people. And so it can be a little bit more difficult that when you start breaking down your relationships to see, are you giving good, a fair value, a fair exchange? Because ultimately people all want to be valued and they all want to feel that they're getting a fair exchange. Now we know that some people, they think if I keep letting you abuse me, then eventually you're going to then give me what I want and what I need. But mostly that doesn't really happen unless something changes that. And that can also be the same with parents, that we keep going back to our parents and demanding that they give us more value. But again, if they haven't got it, then they can't give it. And then again, we have to look at that from a different angle. So there's no quick way through this, Brian. It means years of you adjusting yourself, learning how to be a better mum, a better friend. Keep when they're bringing their props to you, you can help them learn about life. Because ultimately, when you're actually making a true amends, this it should be in this sentiment, especially to children, because they don't want to hear about what happened to you. They care about what you did to them. They just want you to admit your fault. So we should do that when we're making amends to children. We should say this, something along this lines of, I deeply regret how my illness has affected you. I deeply regret it. I can see how my illness has affected you. And when they say, well, you're a bad mum, you did this, you did that, say, you're absolutely right. That was wrong, and I can see how it's damaged you. But how can I help you heal from it? Because again, you've kind of also got to get them to take responsibility for their healing. So he's like, look, I'm more than happy to do whatever it takes to help you heal. If that means I have to pay for therapy, if I have to come round, if I have to put up with you giving me shit a little bit now and then, but I'm just going to keep trying to help you understand this program, this process that set me free. I'm not just going to come around yakking it at you. I'm going to kind of demonstrate it in the way that I live my life. And I'm going to carry this message to you, but it's also for me. But unless they take responsibility for their being and they stop coming to you demanding that you fix them, then they're not going to get well either. And so it's an ongoing journey, but the best thing you can do is to get great recovery for yourself. Because that's exactly what you're going to want to transfer to them. The good news is what we discovered is dysfunction just automatically transfers, but so does recovery. But it is a journey, and there's no quick way to bring it to the end.
Sorry, I'm feeling a bit emotional after all of that. Really, I can't believe what this stuff's doing to me inside and making me feel. So I just want to run something by you, Lester, really. And it's not about me, it's about my kids. I didn't give my kids any emotion at all. I know, I'm fully aware of that. I'm also aware that I'm quite resentful towards my mum because she wasn't affectionate with me, but I know that wasn't her fault because that's the way she was brought up. My dad didn't give me affection because I thought he gave it to my sister, but forget the bit about me, it's not important. My kids, the one thing I really struggle with, especially my younger one who's very angry with me, they give love to a lot of people. And I know what I did do with them when I was young is I used to take them to my nan's. I used to take them round to my friends' houses, and they gave them a lot of love. So am I getting this right in thinking that the reason why that, thank God, they can still give love is because I did at least let other people show it to them? So now I've just got to be patient and tolerant and do what you were just saying in that last bit about doing that way. I've got to do my amends, and then gradually they'll be able to show that to me. Is that, am I getting this right?
Yeah, definitely. And again, I think that's true. If they've got someone in their life that had that emotional ability, see, because again, remember, whatever you feel is you're feeling inside yourself. So if you were loved perfectly by your parents, they had the ability to do that. But as they were loving you in the correct way, that's also developing a network in you, a neural network in you. And so eventually you learn to receive the love and then transmit it. But if them networks haven't been built, you have no way of receiving it or transmitting it. But the good news is that we are capable of that, but the environment that we've been brought up in is what develops it. So if it's not in our environment, we don't develop it. So if they've gone to their grandparents and it's in that environment, then that would develop somewhat in them. But if it's not in you, then you're not going to be able to develop it in you or other people. And that's kind of the reconstruction that it's talking about. Now, the good thing is that you've got to the first point where it's like you can see that and you admit that. That's fine. Shouldn't beat yourself up about it. It's nothing you could do about it. You're just, this is the first time you're ever hearing about it. It's why we're doing this, to try and show you that, look, you don't even know about this. How can it be your fault? But you do have to take responsibility because you do have the capacity to build that network, but you're going to have to start getting you in the right environment. And this is how we start building the other shoe. But that other environment may make you feel a little bit uncomfortable. Well, it'll probably make you feel a lot uncomfortable. So that was one of the things that I learned about when I come into recovery, and why the fellowship, if it's a healthy fellowship, becomes so powerful, because I used to say this, look, we're going to love you till you can love yourself. But then I started to learn the language of the heart. I started to learn about my emotions. But then, you know, again, when you're surrounded by a lot more dysfunctional people, it's a little bit harder to develop your emotions. Because actually, in fact, when you start becoming a bit more healthy, it can start making them feel a bit uncomfortable. Because it's almost like this. Imagine this, that when you're a child, that naturally your emotions are like senses. And so they go out into the world. They go out. You know that you can tell what mood your mum or dad's in, or as soon as you put the key in the door. It's like your senses can feel it in the atmosphere. You know, somebody doesn't have to like punch you or kick you to make you feel something. You can sense it in the atmosphere. So that's what our senses are. So even as children, them senses go out to try and get their needs met, to get some love in their emotions. Now, if your family are emotionally well, then they're going to make that connection with your senses, and then you're going to develop very healthy connections with yourself, with the consciousness, with the universe, you know, with society, and you're going to become well-balanced and well-adjusted. But if you're maladjusted and your family are, when your senses go out for a bit of love, and then let's just say, for example, that your mum, who's been hurt, and so now your senses are going out, and that automatically starts to draw her senses out, but her senses are hurt, and now all of a sudden she's starting to feel hurt. And because you're drawing that part of her out of her, that she's actually had suppressed. And now she's got to get you to stop expecting that kind of love from her, so she may hurt you, and then that'll go back inside, and then you learn eventually I can't use them emotions in this environment. And when everybody learns not to use them emotions in that environment, it keeps the hurt to a minimal, but we know it explodes here and there. And so that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, and it's a little bit more complicated, but again, it's just trying to give you the idea. But so it's a case of, now how do we start redeveloping them hurt emotions? Because, and this is the sad thing, that them hurt emotions, I think, are the better part of you. That we've not experienced, the world has not experienced, or your children, they haven't experienced the better part of you yet, because the better part of you has been hurt. And so it doesn't get to come out. And when it does come out, it comes out hurt, and then it hurts other people. So that's why they say in recovery, the better years of your life lay ahead of you, because we're going to start healing them hurt emotions, and you're going to start helping your children to heal their hurt emotions, at least where you're concerned. And then you're going to start having a new freedom, a new happiness. You're going to start feeling a new love, a new joy. You're going to start feeling more peace. And again, the people like Kelly and Sonia, they're the people that are a bit further down that road. Maybe they can share a little bit about the journey and how it's gone for them, and how it's still going for them. Maybe Kelly or Sonia would like to give a couple of minutes on the testimony of that process.
We've got a couple of minutes. I've got three other people. So would Kelly or Sonia like to unmute yourselves?
Hello. So, yeah, I think I've been speaking to Tracy, and I think that just thinking about, you know, them building them relationships with children and family members, it just takes, you've got the rest of your life to kind of grow and develop in them relationships and then make the changes. And I think for me in the beginning, it just took a lot of courage. I think it took me being consistent in recovery, doing my recovery, and then transmitting the love, and, you know, encouraging them to be honest, and encouraging her to persevere with her life, of all the recovery principles that we talk about, that we practice in recovery, being able to transmit them to her. Like, I don't talk to her about 12 steps, and because she's totally not interested in the recovery stuff, but she is interested in help, being guided and being helped through her life. And I think that Jodie has made, I think my recovery has had a massive impact on Jodie. I think it's totally changed, you know, the way that she thinks and feels. And she goes off every now and then onto her own little journey where she has to have her own learning. And I still love and support her through that as well. And I know that if anything happens to her, I'm the first person that she calls, whatever dilemma it is, whether she gets sacked from her work or boyfriend does this or someone says that or a dad does this. I'm always the first person that she calls. And I think I've been able to be a little angel in her life and kind of guiding her through. It is hard because you have to kind of go through the processes wherever they rant at you, they don't talk to you. I mean, I was honest with her boyfriend a few weeks ago and he hasn't spoken to me since. And with her nan, she's kind of gone on the turn with me a little bit, but I feel so, it is just the way it is. And I've been honest, I've been supportive, I've done what I can, I've checked my motives, I've checked how I've said it. And I think, again, like Lester was just saying, that dysfunctional people get angry at you. When you start trying to shine the light, dysfunctional people get very angry at you. But I know in the deepness of, like, Jodie's nan's heart, I know that no matter what she says or does, I know that she loves me dearly, but she hasn't got the courage to accept the help for her dysfunctional stuff at the moment. And there's some stuff that's gone on, but I can honestly say that I love her with all of my heart, even though we're not talking. So it is a long journey. It takes years and years, and you unveil things and then it gets covered over again, and you overcome that, you overcome this. It's a long journey, beautiful process, and it's the root and it's the most important thing about recovery, I think, having these relationships, deep relationships with your family members. I think it's been the most important thing for my heart, to give me peace in my heart, and continue. Yeah, again, like for Bryony and for Tracy, it's with talking to people that have experienced and overcome the issues that you're facing. So, yeah, that's it for me.
It's just a process, and it's I think firstly it's being kind of armed with the facts about the damage that was caused in the madness, really. And for me, it's about kind of, I just want to be solid in what I do in my program and show them a better way to live and show them that no matter what that they, and sometimes it's hard, but showing them that no matter what they're going through, that I'm going to be there, no matter if that makes sense. And what I've also learned along the way is the more I'm learning to love myself, the more I can love them. And also listening to what Bryony was saying is, I've got the same with my middle child, and she's really damaged, bless her little heart. And I find it really hard. And I worry that I'm like, oh my God, she's going to be like me. She is like me, but it doesn't mean it's going to be the same in the future. But even if it was, I'm going to stand firm in being her mum. And I remember Lester had said to me once, is like, remembering this, and it's, I love it, is, what did I need at that age? What did I need? And that's what I'm trying to learn to give her, and to give them all, and learn to give them the bits that I felt was missing for me growing up. And it's just, like Sonia said, it's just a process, and it is a wonderful, difficult at times, guilty mum stuff sometimes comes in, but I'm learning the more I grow in myself, the more I love myself, I'm better at standing firm in that. But it is a process and it takes time. But yeah, it's living these principles is massive in that process.
Morning. You're all right, Les. Thanks for your talk, mate. And I just wanted to sort of talk about removing unhealthy relationships from your life as well. And I used to have, you know, there was a guy I sort of met in treatment, and he had a lot of issues, and I had a lot of issues, and I'd been a narcissist and an abuser and an horrible person for a lot of years. But as I kind of went on in recovery, I kind of started making little changes and taking some guidance off yourself and Sonia and other people, and it kind of got to a place where, you know, I had Shirley in the background and my family and things like that, right? But I was just putting so much energy into trying to fix all these fellowship people and the friends around me. And some of them, like this, you know, what kind of happened was I realised that I'd become a bit of an empath, over emphatic sort of thing. And I think narcissistic people are quite drawn to that, aren't they? And this kind of friend that I had, it was like he couldn't be happy for anything that was going on in my life. Any conversation we had would always kind of go back to him talking about his problems. He hadn't really made any sort of progress, kept using, and I kept trying to fix him. And then, you know, as long as the conversation went the way he wanted it to go, it was all fine. And then the minute I kind of tried to challenge him on anything or talk about the steps, he'd start moaning. If I talked about anything good going on in my life, he'd just shut it down straight away. And in the end, I kind of got to a point where I had to, talk to him and just sort of say, hey, Shell, you're right. And just sort of say, I'm on here, 2 seconds, babe. And just sort of say to him, like, you know what? Like, I'm not, because he kept saying, oh, you and me are like brothers. Yeah, it was like he had his hooks in me, yeah. And I think in that, it was like all his pain of the past, he was kind of pinning on me, yeah. And it was like a kind of relationship where I had to meet the conditions of what he wanted. And I kind of got to a point where I had to say to him, mate, look, we're not brothers. Yeah, I'll be your friend. Yeah, but I can't continue with this relationship. And we sort of fell apart and he went his way and I went mine. And I spoke to someone a little while later and they were like, yeah, that fella keeps ringing me, keeps saying you and me are like brothers. So, I just got free of that one, mate. But it took a bit of courage and some help from other people. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, I think that is the thing. And I think, it's again, relationships are quite complicated. But when you actually understand the basic principles of them, remember that you can be that cafe owner and you also can be the stinky customer. And as you learn more about this stuff, you start seeing that you're possibly in different relationships, one or the other. But, you know, you start adjusting yourself. But, you know, you can be being manipulated and you can be then manipulating other people and people that are guilty. You know, that when, like I say, we say that when people are guilty, that they can try and be good, but they're not trying to be good for the sake of being good. They're trying to be good to try and soothe their guilt. And so that could be quite damaging to children, that people, you know, don't do the right thing with their children. They do the wrong thing because it makes them feel good. Like, you know, if you got a fat kid and you know, the kid's upset and it's happy when you keep giving it a cake, that's not the right thing to do. And, you know, but it's going to make you feel good for a little while, but it's not a healthy thing to do and it's not a good solution to the problem. You need to find a better solution. So, you know, emotions are like that. And when you're actually not clear on who you are, and again, when you're dysfunctional, you're a victim and you're an easy victim and you're also an abuser. But you're easy to manipulate as well. And, you know, it's like anybody that's not been loved properly are easy to manipulate because they're starving of affection. And so if you start offering them affection, whether you're, you know, like Dan's saying there, if you're someone who's starving from affection and you come across a narcissist who's going to show you loads of affection, they're going to make you feel fantastic. But the payback's going to be a bitch. And you can end up in a very unhealthy relationship. And, you know, you see it with these, you know, domestic violence, isn't it? It's why do you keep going back? And it's because there's something very unhealthy about them that they still think that they're going to somehow, you know, there is this really sort of twisted idea that I think I seem to find in a lot of people where he's like, if you love me, you'll put up with my shit. And they're like, oh, I'll put up with his shit. He must know that I love him and eventually he's going to love me. But again, it's all very twisted and very unhealthy and very dangerous. So this emotional stuff that we're talking about is very kind of invisible. But it really is good the more you learn it. And, you know, people just don't want to bully me. You know, I've noticed that when people get bullied, I kind of think, my first thing is, why are you letting them bully you? You know, I know in these days it's like, oh, it's terrible that you're being bullied. Let's all stop the bully. And he's like, I'm like, hang on a minute. Why are you letting them bully you? There's something missing in you. Don't let them bully you. Otherwise, you're going to have to... It's just something not empowered in you. So I don't think it's good that people bully, because I'm like, why are you bullying him or her? Why are you letting them bully you? I think there's two problems. I don't think there's one problem. I'm really not into this, like, soft little weak lefty stuff. Like, you know, there is a thing about, I just noticed that people won't bully me when I'm not in that vulnerable state. But if they can, and it has happened to me in my life, when I was hanging around with all the gangsters, they put fear in me. And then I noticed that fear then that they put in me started to control me. And then it got to a point where I felt like I've got to kill them. It put me in that position in my early 20s where it's like, because they put that fear in me, the conclusion that I had was I've got to kill them. It's the only way that I can get this fear out of me, because once that fear gets in you, then you can be controlled. And it put me in a very difficult situation. So from that moment on, I thought, I'm not letting anybody going to put fear in me like that again. And again, probably made me a little bit over-aggressive, but I'd rather be over-aggressive than be bullied, to tell the truth. No matter what society says, that's just me.
Hi. I'll be honest. I was asked by the person I'm doing my step work with to bring this up today. But to be honest, I think actually the responses given to Bryony and Tracy and generally have covered it anyway. But the question was, what do you do when you're making amends if there's conflict between the people that you're making amends to, i.e., they all want something from you, but what they want from you to make amends to them conflicts with what other people you're making amends want from you also. For example, your time, how much time you can give people and things like that. And I mean, I think I've answered the question myself in so much as, so long as I, you know, all the motives from my side are checked, really it comes back from what I see people maybe, but amends isn't an easy ride necessarily for the people you're making amends to. Sometimes maybe people have to check themselves in my amends process to them. It might bring up things that are uncomfortable for them, and I think that might be at the heart of it. But yeah, that my question is, what do you do when you're making amends and there's conflict between the people with the amends you're trying to make to different people?
There's no way I could really answer that without seeing the bigger picture. I think, again, that's something that initially, you know, you have to repair the damage that's been done. So again, even if it, I don't know the example, but I kind of look at it like this in creative amends. If you say you've had a child and you've not been there for the birthdays, Christmases, holidays, taking them out on trips, you owe a lot of time. You owe them a lot of time. If it's parents that you haven't been there to sort of do again, everybody's going to have a different view, but what, you know, what the reasonable amount of time you should give your parents, the support you should give them and stuff like that, you've got to kind of look at, you know, what is the reasonable amount of time that I owe them. You know, have you ruined 5 Christmases because of your behavior? You owe them 5 Christmases. You know, that's the way I look at it. It's a case of you have to break each one down and say, what do I actually owe them?
Is it a bit of a case of prioritizing?
Well, always, yeah. I mean, it's not straightforward. It's but the principle is, it's like, look, what do I reasonably owe somebody? What have I denied them of? You know, I noticed with my mum, she kind of liked a bit of cash. My dad liked a bit of time. So I make some time for my dad and make sure my mum gets a bit of cash. You know, she likes more time now, so I think I give her a reasonable amount of time. You know, so I think that's the way I look at creative amends, is I think of what would, you know, make me a good son, a good friend, a good husband, a good employer, a good, you know, I kind of look at that principle, what reasonably makes me a good person. That's in all of these, like I was saying, to Dave there, that I've got all of these different relationships in my life. And again, if I want them relationships to be good, then that's going to take a certain amount of investment. You know, I've got a pretty good marriage, I've got a pretty good wife, but I've got to say, I've invested a lot in that, and I still do. She's not just a good wife because she's a good person, because she is a good person, but I know what she expects, what she likes, what she enjoys, what she don't enjoy, and I do my best wherever reasonable to make our life happy. So, you know, it's having got a good marriage or a good business by chance, I invest a lot of time in it. So it's where you put your investments and kind of what the expectations on you are. But again, that's something you need to hash out. There's no complete rule, but that's the principle, I think.